Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy and the chew. Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you burst into the kitchen, you grab a fist of meatballs and a bone fruition with the bacon and the lamb chops and the scramble and the ham hock.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky.
Spend some time with me.
Mr. Cutlets. That was the name of my pen name for Meet Me in Manhattan. And I'm here doing the Mr. Cutlet Show on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here at Roberta's, the wonderful Bushwick Italian restaurant, pizzeria. And I have my beautiful co-host with me today, the one and only Stephanie Cohen.
Hello, everyone.
Stephanie is, of course, a reporter for one of our hardest-hitting daily newspapers.
I am.
And she covers the mob, which makes her uniquely suited to be on Team Cutlets. Well, we have another guest today, Stephanie. But before I reveal his identity, I'd like to say something about our sponsor. Do you know who our sponsor is today?
No, Josh, I don't.
You do.
I don't.
It's Fairway Market.
Okay.
And Fairway Market has the best olive oil selection probably in the whole world. In fact, you're an idiot if you get anything except the big bottle of the single estate. That's their feature thing. You know, I have the Gata Ertes, and there's another one that's like an Umbrian one. They have 75 different oils. Yeah, we've had other sponsors, and I don't talk about how great they are, but
you love Fairway. I know that.
Best meat, the best retail meat counter. Anyway, we have a good guest today, Stephanie.
Who is he?
He is a man named Steve Plotnicki. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Steve is a noted gastronome.
Mm-hmm.
He's a true gastronome.
High praise.
He has deep pockets and a willingness to eat, which is the two things that are the major qualifications for serious eating in this day and age. And Steve has a website called Opinionated About Dining that is Steve, what is it? I mean, is it like Zagat for gastronomes? Is that how we should understand it?
Well, it's a combination blog that I write, and there's a component of it that's a dining survey that, Zagat, somewhere between Zagat and Michelin for gastronomes.
So this doesn't have, like, when I, you know, I edited it as one of the Zagat books, and
what was that like?
Well, I got to see all of the people's comments,
right.
What everyone writes.
Right.
Did you know that I did that?
I didn't know that.
That was one of my gigs, yeah.
And, you're a hustler, man.
I'm always on. I'm always out to get that cheddar, Steffi.
I know. It's impressive.
This may be more about... I did the Long Island book.
Right.
And maybe it's not as true in New York, but everyone so wildly overrates their local restaurant.
Correct.
Like, every strip mall sushi place is like, it tastes like it's out of the water. You know, like, you'll think you were in Tokyo.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like... And then, of course, like the Cheesecake Factory,
strip mall
in Mattawan. It's like Moslem Paradise or something. When they talk about the Cheesecake Factory, like 3 hours and worth every minute, you know.
Well, that's one of the things that I tried to correct in my survey, because I rate the raters based on the restaurants they visited.
Tell me how this works.
Restaurants are assigned a weight based on how other guides rate them.
So, for example, a Lamoisie or...
Right, would be that you would get the highest points amount of points if you went to Lamboisie, if you were able to review Lamboisie.
Okay.
So you have a weight based on the restaurants you're able to rate.
Right.
And the system works, so you have a higher impact on the final score than somebody who's only been to a sushi restaurant in Oyster Bay.
And who are the raters?
They're everywhere. It's about right now it's 1,800 people.
Just that right
from
now.
All over the world.
And they range in scope from stockbrokers to Wall Streeters.
Wow. Correct. You know?
I have famous economists.
Everyone from millionaires to billionaires.
A member of the British Parliament.
Who? Minister, can you tell us
I'm
who?
Not going to tell you. Minister in the British government.
No.
A famous economist.
So it's completely anonymous, but you know who everyone is.
Well, not completely anonymous.
Right. But you don't, do you tell it?
Well, sometimes I introduce the people to each other, and sometimes they know each other, but I wouldn't reveal that on the radio without getting their permission in advance.
Now, let me ask you this, Steve. They get credit for going to great restaurants, and I always thought that was a good idea. Like, you know, that in the Kansas City Barbecue Society, to be a certified judge, you just take like a 3-hour course or whatever. Right. But what I always thought they should have like a list of the 10 greatest barbecue restaurants or the 15, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you had to show receipts that you had eaten in like 5 of them.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. Is it also... Do they get credit for eating in cities or states outside of where they live?
No. It really has to do with the rank of the caliber of the restaurant you've been to. So if you visit Lamboisie, okay, your opinion is worth more than if you visit La Mie Louis because it's a lower caliber restaurant.
Right.
Okay, it's worth more than if you visit Roberta's Pizza, which is a different caliber restaurant.
Do the people just give numbers, or do they give little
quotes?
They
rate it from must go to can't recommend, with 5 different categories in between.
Why do people do it? Just to be involved?
You know how foodies are. Mm-hmm. They're diehard. Sometimes I create promotions. I give away cookbooks or steaks or discount coupons.
That is a good question. Why? You know, you see people have like 80 reviews on Yelp or something.
Right. I would never do that. I mean, I would. This sounds really cool what you're doing, but I know who writes.
Or if
those
you
reviews?
Had your own blog, I could see.
Who writes
see.
Those?
Yeah. Well, Steve, you would be in a position to understand.
You know, it's people who want the information back that mm-hmm. are willing to contribute. They want to be part of something that gives them the best information about where to eat when they're traveling around the world, and they know by contributing to the process that they're going to have a better result. The results will be better, so when they are going somewhere, they can rely on, you know, the information we produce.
Well, I want to learn more, Stephanie, about Opinionated about dining.
I have a lot of questions.
I can also tell you, I've been out in restaurants, and let me tell you, like, you know who's...
I don't know.
You know who's out in the game by who's out in the game. You know what I mean? Like... I've seen Steve out all over the place. You know,
you look familiar, Stephen.
I'm always out there eating.
All mm-hmm. right, so we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Steve Plotnicki on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Bows and flows of angel hair, ice cream castles in the air, and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, and now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I could have done. The clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud delusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all. Tunes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way you feel, as every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, now it's just another show.
leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love at all.
Stephanie, you know, Stephanie, that's a, that's a, that's a Wally balloon. I always found that song to be very poignant
schmaltzy.
And profound.
Schmaltzy.
That's the that's the Glen Campbell version, of course.
I like the Joni version.
Well, Sinatra also did
a
wonderful march-like version. Now, we're here with Steve Plotnicki from Opinionated About Dining. And Steve is sort of like the... I won't say that he's the... He's a gastronome's gastronome.
Okay.
He gets around everywhere.
Yeah.
He has a very highly educated palate. He is rich.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have to worry
Where
about...
Where does his money come from?
It's not on our business.
Okay.
I heard that it's child prostitutes, but it's more than worth it for the good he does. Right. And part of the good of that is this... OAD, which is like a Zagat ratings, but for gastronomes, for people going. No, it's France, it's America. Where is OAD cover?
The entire United States, Canada, all of the countries in Europe, and we even have places in Israel.
In Israel?
Yeah. I have an Israeli.
But not Asia.
Well, I haven't done it yet. I have an Israeli raider.
What's the best restaurant in Tel Aviv?
You know, it used to be...
look at how he
used
knows.
To be Rushfeld, yeah. But, you know, after the second Infantata started, a lot of restaurants went out of business. So the probably people would say the best restaurant is something. Is a place called Mulyam in the port in Jaffa.
See, Steve is the ultimate guy. Like, you know, people ask me, like, oh, like, I'm going, you know, to the theater. Where should I go afterwards? Uh-huh. And, like, I know,
right.
Like, three restaurants in a 12-block radius, whatever. Like, he's the ultimate guy and be like... I'm in Belgium, you know, like I, you know.
Exactly. I get emails from people all the time saying I'm in Stockholm. I got it from a friend.
All right, let's try it out. Let's
where,
try
where
it.
Should
let's
I
play.
Eat?
Let's
okay,
play. Where should I
want a steak in Copenhagen.
Well, no, that I can't necessarily do. That's a tough one. But
you know something in Copenhagen.
Well, sure, no. If you go to Copenhagen, the place to go eat is Noma. If you've read that list.
This actually brings up something else I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Okay.
Steve has a very cool thing he just did on OAD. He asked various culinary luminaries.
Culinary luminaries, wow.
What their best meal of the year was. What their best meal was and what the rising young talented chef of the future was.
Were you among those asked?
I was, although I probably don't deserve to be on the list, just given that I only eat in New York. But I do eat in a lot of good places.
You do.
Anyway, you said, you included yourself in there.
Correct.
And interestingly, and because I think probably of everyone on the list, you probably have eaten in more of these places, more good restaurants internationally, you know, chefs never leaving their restaurants and so forth. You said that this restaurant Norma was the best
Noma.
Meal. Noma was the best meal you had all year.
No.
He said El Bulli.
I said El Bulli.
Oh, he said El Bulli. Somebody said Noma, though.
A lot of people said Noma.
Okay, so let's leave the El Bulli part out for a moment.
Right.
I never even heard of this Noma until like a month ago.
Okay, Noma is a restaurant that is run by a chef named Rene Redzepi, and he has created something called the New Nordic Cuisine.
Was there an old one?
Well, I guess...
that was like raw fish or something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I guess the new Nordic cuisine, and this is something that's catching on all over Northern Europe, is rediscovering local and artisanal ingredients, and I guess heritage ingredients.
Figuring that's old news for us.
Right, that were never not known outside of the country, so he makes things like muskox tartare. Langoustine's local.
And that's good? Did you eat it?
I haven't been yet. I'm actually going on the first week of February.
Well, see.
So how?
But everybody raves about it. All the chefs rave about it, and everybody says that you have to go. And
Noma.
Yeah, so there you go.
And
what he's done is catching on all over Holland and Belgium, and they're all digging up artisanal ingredients, heirloom ingredients.
You know, I mean, how is this a new thing?
Yeah, where were they?
I mean, seriously.
Well, it's like, it's not the idea of using artisanal ingredients. It's specific. It's our ingredients that are specific to their region. Like, there's a chef in Belgium who just had a dinner.
Just serves waffles.
Well, no, he had, he had a very special waffle. No, he serves beef from a breed, from a herd of cattle that are 50 heads that have been a herd for hundreds of years that nobody outside of Belgium really
have
knew.
You eaten that meat?
I haven't done yet.
See, a lot of
I'm
times
going
though,
also
the
in prob- February.
The problem with a lot of those, of all, that's where the local, I've said this point so many times, I even bore myself
say
about
it again.
It, but that beef is where locavorism's virtues stop. Like, the border of locavorism's benefits is beef, because so many of those breeds and the local cows and heritage animals and everything, like, I mean, the modern freak genetically engineered cow, American beef animal, is like, it's like the difference between, you know, like if you have my Audi and then you decided, like, wouldn't it have like a car like from the golden age of motoring where you wear goggles and stuff to drive it?
Steve, what do you think? Do you like grass-fed heirloom meat?
I'm not a grass-fed meat guy. I'm a grain meat guy.
He knows.
I like it creamy and fatty.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Some guys like it grass-fed. Like, I had a thing with Dan Barber about this. He's like, oh, I can't eat that creamy, grain-fed thing anymore. And I'm like, you know, for me, that's
I'd find
fantastic.
Him rather a pill. I'll tell you. I'd find
like
him
Dan.
Rather a stuffed shirt.
Obama liked him.
Well, exactly.
Obama likes
that's
him
the
very
pool
much,
the president eats with. You know,
he's good, Dan.
You know, it's...
wait, can we ask Steve about his favorite place?
Sure.
Well, he said El Bulli, right?
Right.
And tell us about the meal.
I was just there last month, and it was different than... This is my third visit. The first two times I was there in the spring, and they serve a particular kind of menu. This time they open from June through December so they could work with truffles.
Wow.
And the two dishes that with white truffles, one was a variation on pistachio. Roasted pistachios, pistachio cream, pistachio gel, pistachio, you name it. Five or six different variations of pistachio on a plate with a hunk of white truffle ice cream. And then they took sweet potatoes and they made what they call gnocchis. Not real gnocchis, but little tubes with sweet potato puree and white truffles on top. Those were fantastic.
White truffle ice cream.
No, the first was white truffle ice cream. The second was just shaved white truffles.
Right.
It was a really, really good meal.
I'm sure.
All right. Well...
You have to look at, you have to want to, you have to be interested as food, not as sustenance.
No, I know. I'm at a great disadvantage because I'm at a great disadvantage, especially via Steve, because I've never eaten in any of the good Spanish restaurants. So my ideas about molecular cuisine are garnered entirely from its most incompetent emulants, you know.
Ow.
I mean, not.
And who
That's
might
not
that
true.
Be?
Well, not Wiley, because Wiley's great. But I've only eaten there like twice or something. But like, you've seen knockoffs and ripoffs,
right?
Of you know what have become cliches, you know. But I want to get and talk about some of the other people on the list, and then we're going to take a quick little break. Going through this, Tony Bourdain said the Royal Mall. That's the I saw that on No Reservations. That's the restaurant in the middle of the. Outback somewhere.
Yeah, the Royal Mail. Right.
Have you eaten there?
No, I haven't been. I've never been to Australia.
That looked good.
But I'm doing an episode with. I'm on a Bourdain episode coming up on this season.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Good. So am I.
He's done an episode. I don't know if it's the same one on people who are obsessed with food.
We're on the same episode.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic.
That's awesome. That's
wait,
so bad we couldn't
I ask
all eat
a,
together.
One quick question.
Yeah.
Or do you want to finish going through the list?
Why don't we take a little break and then we'll come back on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Bye.
Okay, well, so we're in a kind of a psychedelic mood today, listening to the birds and talking about all these crazy molecular foods overseas. Let's see, we're talking with Steve Plotnicki here on the Heritage Radio Network about some of the people he polled for Opinionated About Dining's list of the best meals of the year. Now, looking at this list here, we've got Danny Meyer says Ubuntu in Napa, California. Another restaurant I never ate at.
You would like that restaurant.
Why?
Well, it's a vegetarian restaurant.
All right, let's go to the next one.
It's a vegetarian restaurant, and but they cook like it's meat. You would never know it's vegetarian.
Oh, I feel like they do that in Chinese. Oh, no, that's the Chinese do the same thing.
He would know it's not meat.
All right, so Kim Chang Il is right. Up next with Il Bulli.
Right.
He picks out. They also are all picking out the chef with the chef of the future, as I would call it, chef with most potential. He says Corey Lee. I mean, Corey Lee's already pretty established as you can get. The Ripper says that his meal of the year was L2O. Now, that is a chef that I have the highest regard for, Laurent Gras.
Right.
And I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts that you've eaten in this restaurant.
I ate there in the end of August, and my meal was fair.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
You know, people have different tastes. The Ripper's taste is maybe a little bit more classic than mine. And
see, maybe
the Ripper's a seafood fanatic, and L2O is a seafood restaurant.
Okay.
And I found half of what Laurent was cooking great, and the other half to be kind of okay.
Well, maybe because you eat out at so many restaurants, your tastes have become so rarefied that you require these molecular extravaganzas now.
But that's like saying you go to so many good museums that you could only, you know, you could only look at Picasso.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
That's something about food that's unusual.
Well, this brings up an interesting point. A.J. Liebling observed in Between Meals that his education was largely the function of him being broke a lot of the time. The example he gave was like, he only had enough, he could get either the Tevel Superior and a beef heart, or he could get the Contrefilet and the Tevel Ordinaire.
It's a terrible dilemma he had.
But a rich man, which is the phrase he uses, would have just ordered the Contrefilet and the Tevel Superior, and so never would have learned about the pleasures of the cheaper versions. And I think
you don't think that's like a funny version of class warfare?
It's the snobs versus the slobs.
No, really. Don't you really think that's a funny version of... People learn about these things because they're passionate about it.
But okay. Do you eat burgers and...
Sure, all the time. You know.
He's a very... He's a very menschy kind of guy.
Yeah, I grew up in Queens. Actually, I was born... it's my old neighborhood. When I was first born, my parents lived in the projects on the corner of Graham and Scholes with my grandmother. Till I was one, and my grandmother lived there till she died, which in 1970. So I know this neighborhood really well.
This place?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm convinced by those bona fides.
Yeah, I don't.
I think having been born in Queens doesn't guarantee egalitarian.
Didn't you read my blog article about the Penguin Drive-In in Charlotte where they serve you those three hamburgers?
Oh, I did read that. I did read that.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, God. I eat all of that stuff. Yeah, oh, my God.
The problem,
I take it all back.
The problem with burgers and all of that stuff is that... it's hard to find somebody who's really trying to make a good one.
Well, listen, we could talk for a whole show about that. Well, I want to get back. Unfortunately,
go ahead.
We're in the last segment.
All right.
And I want to go through some of the other people here.
Okay.
Now, you asked George Mendez, who a lot of people put as the chef with the most potential.
Right.
Certainly, George is very talented.
Yeah.
And he said...
And a nice guy.
And a nice guy.
Lovely guy.
Wonderful guy. He has a little bit of... Who remember when Ben Stiller was a male model? Zoolander. He has a little Zoolander streak to him a little bit.
All right.
He likes to give the blue steel, you know.
Right.
But George says Cortone.
Right.
And I'm interested in this because Paul Liebrandt
right.
he probably is. I bet he's a chef that you enjoy, whose food you enjoy
very much. And I've eaten in every restaurant he's ever worked in. Atlas, Le Papillon, every weird one. I've been to all of them, and I've seen him all along the way.
And it's a pleasure, isn't it, to follow a chef as they develop? That's the thing with these chefs with potential, to watch as their wings unfold.
Correct. You know? That's the whole idea. For me, the best part of putting this list together is finding out which two or three places I need to go visit year.
What are... this is another quick question.
Right.
I hate to batter you like this. No, speed round.
You can do this forever. Go ahead.
But what... parenthetically, are the three places for after reading all, because this is just a selection out of what, probably hundreds of that you got. What
these are the heavy hitters. These are the high.
Yeah, these are big
four up and coming chefs.
No, restaurants that you after reading this want to go to.
Well, the one that came up five different times and was I'm going to Noma already, and I know him very well already. There's a restaurant in Boquerant, Spain, for a chef named Paco Morales, and the restaurant's called Ferrero, and five different people named him as the up-and-coming chef, from Dan Barber to a pastry chef in New Zealand to Doc Scons, who writes a blog, to a pastry chef in Montreal, Patrice Demers. So, you know, I'm going to make it my business to go visit that restaurant this year.
Wow, that's really...
Steve, how did you get into this world, where you're not a food person originally?
No, I was in the music industry.
Oh.
You don't know what I did before this?
You were a guitarist.
No, long time ago. I owned the recording company that Run DMC recorded for.
Oh,
did you?
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't it Def Jam?
No, they recorded for Profile. All right, let's not go there.
From Queens.
No, right. I owned that recording company. Okay.
I'm confused. I thought their label was Def Jam.
No, that...
Before that.
Their brother, Joe, Run's brother's label was Def Jam.
Who killed
Run DMC,
Jay?
I don't know. I wish I knew.
I wish I knew.
But Run DMC was on my label, which was Profile. Okay.
Okay.
So that's how I became successful. Wow. I sold the company in 1998. And I was always into food. My father was a kosher butcher. All right. But I used to end up having to travel to Europe a lot for business, and I got to eat in a lot of great restaurants in France, and it became a hobby.
This is what Andy was telling us. A lot of musicians.
A lot of, we had Andy Chernoff here.
Food,
right?
As a second
one. He's a drummer.
No, Andy Chernoff was
a songwriter.
He was the founder of the Dictators.
Got it.
And also another native of Queens from Jackson Heights.
Uh-huh.
Like Kiss and Johnny Thunders
Bayside,
and so forth.
Bayside.
Yeah, they were all around the same place.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what, Stephanie?
What?
I think we should do another segment with Steve.
I'm fascinated.
So we're going to have Steve back next week, or certainly his master's voice, you know. This is Josh Ozersky on the Mr. Cutlet Show on the Heritage Radio Network.
There's no tenderness like grief falls in your fingertips. You're trying hard not to show it, but baby, baby, I know it. You lost that love and feeling. Oh, that love and feeling. You lost that love and feeling. Now it's gone, gone, gone. Oh. Now there's no welcome look in your eyes when I reach for you. And you're starting to criticize little things I do. It makes me just feel like crying. 'Cause baby, something beautiful died in. You lost that love.
Ha! It's all gone, baby. This is Josh Ozersky, the Caribbean Tiger. I am here at Roberta's in Bushwick, everyone's favorite Italian restaurant, certainly my third favorite. I'm here with Stephanie Cohen. We're with Steve Plotnicki from Opinionated About Dining. And we were talking about Steve's survey, where a lot of gastronomical luminaries are talking about their chefs of the future and also their best meals of the year. I want to go through a few of these. I also want to ask you, Steve, you're going to have a book, like a Zagat-like book, a big guide that's coming out this year sometime, right?
I'm planning on releasing a guide to dining in the U.S. Next fall of 2010.
See, that's going to be the must-have.
How are you going to roll it out as different, to differentiate it from Zagat's and Michelin?
More accurate ratings. For
there
one.
You go.
No, but an important aspect of it is covering parts of the country that have a lot of really good restaurants that don't get any coverage now, like Portland, Maine, for example. Portland, Maine has to be one of the best eating cities in the country.
Because they say that Portland, Oregon is a very good eating city.
I haven't found that yet through the data I collected. But
have you eaten there?
Portland, Maine?
No.
Portland, Maine, yes.
Portland,
I was there
Oregon.
Last month. Now, it's on my list of places to go.
It's on my list of places to go, too.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go this spring sometime. But there are a lot of good restaurants. Hugo's in Portland, Maine. The Townhouse in Chilhowee, Virginia.
McCrady's put that as your favorite.
Right, McCrady's.
Wait,
in Charleston,
what
South
is your
Carolina
favorite?
Is one of my up-and-coming chefs.
Is who?
John Shields from the Townhouse in Chilhowee, Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah.
Steve, what is your day? What is your week like? Are you just?
I write about.
But are you traveling a ton?
I've been running around the country for the last number of months, eating to write the book. I was up in Portland, Maine.
Now, do you lift dumbbells or run around or something? I mean,
no.
They always used to ask me, why aren't you fatter? And it was I always thought a fair question.
Hyperkinetic.
Yeah, that's me too.
Right.
I'd like to move on to some of the other places on here. For example, now this is interesting. Thomas Keller says that do you know what Thomas Keller said his top dish of the year was?
No. What did he say?
It is the Marea Fusilli with octopus and bone marrow.
I know you like that
dish.
Do you like that dish?
I love that dish. I love that dish. And I consider that an especial vindication. I'll tell you why.
A vindication of what?
Of me. Because when I did a radio show with Adam Platt, one time, for Chow, and it's still on there, we talked about Michael White. And this was when Michael White was first, before his current apotheosis.
Right.
And I said that he is the Thomas Keller of Italian food.
Uh-huh.
And Platt snorted derisively and everything, but oh, how they've all changed their tune. Here's Keller himself, the dean of American gastronomy. And it is a kind of Kellerian dish. I mean, both those guys are very meticulous about their use of fat. You know what I mean? Like, they use rich ingredients, but they use it in an incredibly pristine way. Because I find that a lot of the restaurants, like, that people recommend that I go to, or like, it's meaty, they have pork belly and ears and eyes or whatever.
Right.
But it's like sloppy.
Right.
And to have that kind of food and it be sloppy is just gross.
Right. Okay.
You know,
I like Michael White's crudos. I think his crudos are fantastic.
You don't like his spaghetti, his pasta?
Well, I don't eat pasta. I'm wheat gluten intolerant.
Oh my God, that's awful. I'm sorry.
That's a secret.
Yeah, you know what? We may have to edit that one out. Not
why? You know, it's not a big deal.
No,
it's
your Achilles heel.
A lot of chefs make me special breads when I go. I get all kinds of wheat-free breads. Where, if I go to the Per Se or the French Laundry, there's all kinds of cornbread and rice bread.
Really?
Oh yeah,
that's interesting.
Charlie Trotter made fantastic corn muffins for me. And when I was in Portland 2 weeks ago, one of the restaurants that a couple of people on there named Bresca, which is a really good Italian restaurant. You would like it a lot, Josh. She has a great sea urchin linguine, and she made it for me with brown rice pasta. It was fantastic.
They actually make believe it or not, they make a nice one of those here at Roberta's.
Sea urchin pasta?
Yeah. The food here is much, you know what? We live this. Well, you know what? This is nice. We live in a, our existence, Steve. Is, you think
it's,
about it.
It's
like,
pretty good life.
You know what I mean? Think about like my father had to was like.
What'd your father do?
He was a stagehand.
My father was a Holocaust survivor, so well, we have a great existence.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you know, definitely. We're all, it's all an upgrade from Auschwitz. I think we can agree there. but no, I mean, like, I are working class Jewish guys, whatever. Right, yeah. Like, for them, my father ate. He went, you know, to Robichon, and he was one of Vonger Richten's favorite. He was good. Like you. Right. Those guys loved him and knew him and everything. But when I was younger, you know, and I'm sure it was the same way for you, like, it was a big deal to get spare ribs and egg foo young. You know what I mean? Like, Chinese that's what we all grew up eating.
Right. Shrimp and lobster sauce.
Shrimp and lobster sauce. How long is that?
Lobster sauce is really pork sauce.
Yeah, I know. I know. I forgot what the significance of this was, Stephanie, why I raised the point.
That you live
we live
nice
pretty
life.
Well.
We live well.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, let's look forward to some of the other best meals of 2009. I see here that Mike Anthony, this is interesting to me that I'm glad there were some shout outs for the haute cuisine.
Right.
I mean, that's all haute cuisine, but the French haute cuisine.
Classicists.
Well, are they classicists? One guy, Mike Anthony, who is one of my five favorite chefs in America, said Pierre Gagné is his.
Right.
Now, what?
Have you ever eaten at Pierre Gagné?
No. It's Garnier, is that
Garnier?
Oh, see, I didn't. I'm still in from Queens.
Did you grow up from Queens?
No, I'm from Atlantic City, but it's
the White House sub shop.
The poor man's Queens.
How's the White House?
The
sub
White
shop?
House sub shop.
Chef Vola.
It's the Peter Luger of subs.
Yeah.
Well known and overrated.
Really?
Yes.
I always enjoyed it. How about Chef Vola?
I liked Chef Vola.
Chef Vola's a cool
there was
place.
There was a lot of Chef Vola type places back then.
Yeah.
But what about Garnier? Now, why do you think he likes it, and do you like it?
I think Garnier, you can make a case that he's the most talented chef in the world.
In the world, more than the Spaniard.
He really cooks. He's got a way of cooking.
Like what? Like
he's
how?
Got a talent, you know? Ask me, like, some guys have a way of playing guitar. It's just the way their touch and feel is. He has a way of cooking that stands alone. Problem with Garnier is that you go to the restaurant and half of the food is the best food you ever ate in your life, and the other half of the food leaves other half of the dishes leaves you cold.
It's too bad. If you knew ahead of time, though, you could only get the good ones.
If you would read, you know, I must have 100 ratings of Garnier, and I would say that comment comes up a significant percentage of the time.
Why is that?
You know, he cooks for himself. He doesn't really cook for, you know, other people.
Well, you know what? I bet if someone goes to OAD, and I'd like, Steve, for you to give us the URL for it, I bet they can find a review or comments or essays of some kind by you about him and a lot of other restaurants.
Correct.
And what is that URL?
That is www.opinionatedaboutdining.com.
Now, this is interesting. Paul Liebrandt, the Wunderkind of Cortone.
Right.
He says Arpège, where I would have thought he might have said, but this is interesting.
It's my favorite restaurant in the world.
That's your favorite?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? We have to wrap it up, too.
It's the purest expression of, it's the perfect expression of 2,000 years of culinary technique.
Really? Why? What do they cook there? What kind of restaurant is it?
First of all, he has his own farm. Where all the vegetables come from there. All right. And he has worked out slow cooking methods where he.
Like with the bag, cooking in the.
Well, no, he uses minimal fats, okay? And he cooks very, very slowly, sautés very slowly, has come up with methods. And no, if you could eat just a beet or an onion or a very simple.
But it's not a vegetarian restaurant, though.
No, but, you know, vegetables are a very important part of his. Yeah,
does he make meats though? There,
he does, but there was a time where he didn't make meat. He has fantastic fish dishes and fantastic lobster dishes, but his vegetables are really fantastic.
You know, Stephanie, I think I have to. It's good. This is like being. You know, I'm trying to think what the example is like. they used to say it was like the second fattest man in the world meeting the fattest man in the world. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that I got around to good restaurants and everything, but it's to see how much Steve knows. As I talk to Steve about restaurants, you realize just what a huckleberry you really are. You know?
No, but wow. You have a fun life.
Steve, I'd like you to come back again and visit us.
It would be my pleasure. Just let me know, man.
I'm Josh Ozersky with Stephanie Cohen. We're on the Heritage Radio Network on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me.